Now, joining us now, are you familiar, Derek, with the Zabeth and Paul Bain case?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, they're walking into the studio as we speak. Doug Christie, their lawyer, will also be joining us on the phone. He's been very involved in the case. Hello, Zabeth.
Hi.
Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Nice to have you both here. Now, we talk about what we can do that's productive. And just let me take a moment to introduce you to Mark Hashik. Mark, Zabeth Bain. And hubby Paul. And you get to meet people under the most interesting circumstances here at Roadkill.
Yes.
But you have taken the situation involving your family because your children were removed. We've done quite a bit on your story. You had great help again from the internet, a wonderful tool for people to get the truth out about what's going on. Has there any news on your case? Are you making any progress?
Yeah, we've been in meetings, and there is some progress. I'm for sure going to have an update for you after July 23rd.
Okay.
But we're making some positive progress, and I look forward to sharing that with you.
Should this be something that I can just sort of feel a smile coming on about?
Well, we've had more time, more access with our children, and we just spent a wonderful day with all four of them going to the park, and it is no longer supervised.
Oh.
So, yeah. That's,
so you're among
the
safe parents now.
We've had a wonderful day. Yeah.
And just quickly, because Mark is getting crash course in this. His head is probably spinning, like, what planet am I on? What country did they dump me into?
Yeah.
I got on that roadkill road, and where did I end up?
Exactly. It's like Soviet-style stuff there.
Welcome to Communist Canada, the part you never knew about. Now, just briefly for our viewing audience, you know, your story is well featured on our website. We've helped to do fundraising. It just in a very quick commentary, you know, give us sort of the background to your case. You have four children, and going back almost 3 years now, is that when this nightmare started for you?
We're nearing 4 years.
Are we almost
in
at
October,
4 years now?
We are at 4 years. So, it's incredibly long.
Now, you've lost your home, your jobs, your ability to make money. You were a piano teacher. You had to sell your grand piano, right?
Yes, we did.
To help facilitate and fund this war with the ministry. What happened almost 4 years ago that changed your world?
There was an accident in our home.
And you had three children at the time?
We had three children at the time, and our little girl was a baby, 6 weeks old at the time. 3 weeks at the time of the accident. And there was an injury between our children. Our son had stumbled and fallen onto our baby, and that cascaded everything.
Okay, now, because the ministry's been involved with your lives for so long, obviously you just ignored the fact that your daughter was injured. You chose not to be concerned about the vomiting. You just ignored all that. And just carried on, right?
Quite on the contrary. We spent near 3 weeks going to hospital after hospital, clinic after clinic, staying up, you know, shift work all through the night. She was vomiting, losing weight. It was a grave concern.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that you acted like responsible parents, you took your child to the hospital, you sought medical attention, and what were you told?
We were told at Children's Hospital that it was a case of shaken baby syndrome.
But that was afterwards. I mean, you went to hospitals prior to this, did you not?
No, we were sent home. We were told that she was either constipated or she had reflux.
Okay.
And she was on medication for reflux. And, of course, that did nothing.
Okay. But even after the first time you were told that, then you just ignored her symptoms then and didn't pursue it, right?
No, we pursued it aggressively.
Yeah. But wait, Zabeth and Paul, you're not painting a picture here of abusive parents that are just, you know, going to torment and torture their children and put them in a corner and just abandon them. You're acting like I would with my four children, that you would seek help. You would want to know what was wrong with them.
Well, exactly, and that's the problem. Many parents right now don't realize they have an injury in the home, or they wake up in the morning to find that their child has vomited and unresponsive, and what do? They naturally go to the hospital and seek help, and instead they're finding fingers being pointed back at them. Instead of getting the explanations they want, they're being told to provide that explanation.
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation that you raise, because I say this often. Most parents now if little Johnny falls off the fence and has a hurt arm, there's almost a reluctancy, a fear to go to the hospital because you know you are going to be interrogated about what happened to that child and you are going to be suspect.
Yeah, well, naturally, every parent wants to know that, you know, the community is looking out for their children, too. But it's gone so far now that innocent accidents, there's a presumption of guilt rather than accidents happen. You know, disease happens. Mm-hmm. Prematurity happens. But yeah, that's not the first thing they go to.
And in Derek Carr's case, you know, autistic children escape and go for little two-hour jaunts would need police to help find.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Now, through your experience, so finally you end up at Children's Hospital,
yes.
And what happens then? Your life gets changed.
Yeah, changed for many years. We had not anticipated. Yeah, she had an MRI, CT scan done, and the diagnosis was shaken baby syndrome.
And what doctor made that diagnosis?
Yeah, it was Dr. Colburn at Children's Hospital.
Okay. And did anybody talk to you about what had happened to the child at this point, or they just didn't believe you now?
During the 3 weeks, we had told various doctors what had happened of the accidents, and it was dismissed, as I said, for reflux or constipation. When we arrived at Children's Hospital, we gave the history again, and that is in our documents. And again, that was dismissed. And we tried a second time to speak with her and go through the accident, but there was no speaking and addressing. It was shaken baby syndrome, and they were satisfied with that answer.
And end of subject.
End of subject.
So now we'll just fast forward because we don't have time to go in all the details. But, of course, the shaken baby syndrome has now remained a constant throughout this. The ministry is still very concerned about you shaking your baby.
I believe the ruling now is that it's an unexplained accident, and the judge placed an emphasis on shaken baby syndrome.
So they then just changed the whole theory then. What they first accused you of, they couldn't have any support, so they then just changed things?
I believe it was in 2009 that the diagnosing doctor had then added that it was impact as well.
Hmm. Okay, so now, what then happened? Was your daughter removed from the hospital?
She went into care from the hospital.
Okay, and your other two children, there wasn't a problem with them, so they just stayed with you, right?
No, not with us. They actually were placed with the grandparents for a time, and we were not living with them at the time either. So that happened a little later on.
Okay. Now, you sought, like most people do, some attention because this was a wrongful apprehension of your children. You brought in the media, and the ministry didn't like that. As a matter of fact, they punished you as a result of that, did they not?
We did have a mediation agreement, and our two boys had been returned under supervision order. Well, they were going to file that with the court. And as a result, following the media involvement, that was annulled. We didn't go through with the agreement.
Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened? You've brought in experts now, and finally people are starting to... You've had experts review your daughter's medical records.
Yes.
And do they say the injuries are consistent with what you explained happened?
Yes, they did.
And, of course, so the first time a judge heard this, he ordered all your children back right away, did he not?
No. No, we're still waiting.
Well, explain how they rationalized this then.
Well, the ruling determined it was an unexplained injury, an unexplained accident. And
well, I have four kids, Beth, and thank God they all survived me as their mother, and they're grown up now, right? But there was always unexplained injuries going on at our household. I mean, they would injure themselves, and they wouldn't know what happened to them. You know, I mean, we have a farm, throw yourself off a horse or a roof or whatever. You know, pop a skateboard up and clip your chin, and off we go for stitches.
No, Carrie, times have changed.
Suggest that to me.
Well, what concerns me, too, and that's very purposeful why I ask about the judge, Zabeth, because it seems to me in a lot of these cases, I will say, in the past few years, we've had some what I view as maverick judges that will just say, get those kids home. And the ministry doesn't always have to listen to that. They can just reapprehend or do whatever they want to. But in most cases, most judges, from what I have seen, regrettably, are so fearful about making a bad decision, it's just easier to let the case, you know, they just hide under the skirts of the social workers, right? And they don't make a decision. They put this off or ask for this expert report. And this industry that is created by your 3 and 4 children now, because you've had another baby in just, how old is the
He's
new baby
months.
Now? 5 months now. My goodness. You know, there's this industry. Now tell me, let's talk a little bit about this industry. Your 4 children are placed in a foster home. How much money do foster homes get per child? Do we know?
I think it depends on the level of care that they're in. Our children have been classified as special needs children, so it was more extensive.
So do we know how much they're budgeted for then every month?
I believe in the court documents, when there was 3 children, their budget was at $5,600.
Per month?
Per month.
The foster family?
For 3 children.
Tax-free, because foster families don't pay tax?
Yes.
Okay. $5,600 per month we're paying a foster family with our money, Mark. We're generous, hey? Mm. To take care of your 3 children. Okay. Now, then what happened when the baby came along?
The baby was placed with his siblings.
Okay. Did we then need extra support in the foster home, or did they just carry on with the 4 children?
Well, previously when the 3 children were there, there was a nanny.
Oh, a nanny on top of this then. So foster families with 3 special needs children get a nanny. Is that what happens?
I think it's a choice of the caregiver.
Okay. But the reason why I'm asking, because I'm thinking of Derek Hoare, super dad in my books, right? 2 autistic children, 1 11-year-old son, a family working hard, striving together. You know, wouldn't it be much more cost efficient if we just got Derek a nanny? You know, if they're worried about another set of eyes being a part of this family, you know.
Yeah, if they felt there was too much for Derek to handle, I think the money would be well placed to provide him with that.
Way cheaper for Mark and me.
Way better on the daughter.
Yeah. Okay, $5,600 plus a nanny. I did it all wrong. I should have just scooped somebody else's kids and got paid for it. I think, no, they're not mine, but I'll take care of them. Please give me a check, $5,600 and a nanny. Sounds like a deal, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So we go to the court. Nobody's making any decisions. Finally, you get a new social worker, a new set of eyes on this, and that's
yes,
what I've heard.
Do. Okay. Yeah, we do, and that's working very well right now. We appreciated the change. That should have happened a long time ago.
Yeah, and that's brought a whole new dimension sort of to the relationship then that we see happening.
Yeah.
Now, you guys have turned this nightmare into a rather a positive kind of experience. You have rallied the troops, if I will. You've had Ron Unruh, who organized a website for you, and that has taken your story out there. People are very aware of what's gone on in your lives. We received calls after calls about your cases over the years, and I know the same thing happened with Derek. The minute Derek's story first hit the Abbotsford news, you know, I was off in my nice little insanely busy world anyway, and then I got inundated with, Carrie, you got to help Derek. Who the heck's Derek, you know? And fortunately, the Abbotsford News had picked up his story. Rob Unruh's done a great job in keeping your story out there. But this has brought together a very supportive community for you, and you've put together a conference. Tell us what is the genesis behind the conference. Why are you doing the conference? Who's coming to the conference, and who should be at the conference?
That's going to take a while, Carrie.
I know.
I don't know how many questions there.
Well, now I can just sit back and breathe, right?
My turn, huh? Yeah. Well, it's called the Evidence-Based Medicine and Social Investigation Conference, and, of course, it's developed because of our case. And what we were hoping to deal with, we're finding that parents, they go to a hospital, like I was saying, and they have an injured child or they have a child that is exhibiting symptoms that they're concerned about, and they have no idea why. And as a concerned parent going to that hospital and seeking help, what happens to them? Their life turns upside down, and they're not given any differential diagnosis. Their fingers pointed at them as if they abused their child or neglected their child in some way, and then they're get rolled into the system. Social workers come knocking on their door. The police come interrogating them. They're thrust into the court system. They're without their family. Some of them are
in
jail.
You're vilified, aren't you?
Completely.
And I mean, that, to me, you are robbed of all, you're this good person doing what you're supposed to do in our civil society, working hard, raising a family, and suddenly you're worse than a criminal because you don't even have the same rights as a criminal. You're worse. You're lower than the lowest.
Yeah, it affects every part of your life. It affects your job. I mean, for me, I was working with children. I know a lot of other families that are working with children. They can no longer do that anymore because they have a label on them. It's a stigma that even after they're exonerated, that sticks with them for the rest of their lives. So what we want to deal with at conference is we've got together a whole bunch of various doctors and various specialties.
A very respectful lineup of speakers.
Yes, they're experts in their field. I mean, you've got Dr. Barnes, who's with Stanford and the Lucile Packard Children's Hospital, and he's on the child abuse team. And it's just been amazing to have him come down and speak at the conference, and he's going to address some of the things he's going to address is to do with bone disease.
Hmm.
And that's something that's near and dear to us as well, having a premature child. Yeah, Baden had osteopenia prematurity.
Right.
And that's something else that can be diagnosed as abuse instead of, there are hundreds of different diagnoses.
You're hitting all the critical points on the list, right?
So. But these are huge.
Yeah.
And a lot of people aren't aware that rickets is prevalent nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, there's such a lack of vitamin D in our diet, and even from outdoors with the sun creams.
The what? Wait a minute. Sun?
Vitamin D.
Sun?
Yeah.
Sun? This year, big issue in British Columbia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have this team of experts, and the focus is on what should be just logical, though, Zabeth and Paul. I mean, this is... You know, this is some of these cases, and again, I've had, you know, too much exposure, just are ludicrous. There's no thinking. I'll give you a quick example. One of the sex abuse prevention programs in the schools taught little kids that everything under a one-piece bathing suit was your private part. And then, of course, it wasn't a sex abuse prevention program. It was a sex abuse disclosure program where daddy and grandpa were the bad guys, you know, and you report them to your teacher. And you heard their names 26 times through this program as in abusive scenes. So little five-year-olds. I mean, it was horrifying just simply on the psychological message that we're sending kids about dads, you know. But the one-piece bathing suit. So all these little kids, 5 and 6 years old, you know, diligently reported their fathers for doing things like changing their diapers and tickling their belly buttons and all those kinds of things. And kids were being scooped after going through this program. We had this rise in it, right? And so I finally got a hold of this program because one of my best friends had her kids apprehended. And, you know, you looked at this, just common sense would tell you, excuse me, kids are going to be, you know, they're not even, the kids aren't even screwed up because they're doing what the program tells them to do. You know, report your dad for changing your diapers and report your dad for tickling you because that's under your one-piece bathing suit. So I called the School of Social Work and I said, look, what are you teaching your social workers about this program in the, you know, when they investigate all these disclosures that are happening through the public education system? You know, these false disclosures. Well, what do you mean the false disclosures, Carrie? And I said, well, you know, this is ludicrous. Oh, no, there's usually more. The children just aren't ready to give us all the information yet. And at that point, I knew that we were really in big trouble because this is the mentality that you have to deal with some of these social workers or a lack thereof. I don't know. But, you know, there should be investigative protocols that have to be, you know, followed. In Derek's case, I mean, this is why I harp so much on the legislation. You know, you have to conduct an investigation. Investigation to me is a verb. It's an action word. There should be something associated that says, yes, we conducted an investigation, and at bare minimum, one that even a five-year-old could come up with if they were looking for their lost kitty cat, right? You know, Derek's son, when he lost his kitty cat, you know, did an investigation, and then when he couldn't find it, he phoned 911. I love that
story. But
that's
the key word, investigation.
Yes.
And that's what's lacking in these cases is that the investigation stops. There's a presumption of guilt. And usually in the criminal system, you're presumed innocent until you're proven guilty. In the family courts, you're guilty and you have to prove yourself innocent. But the investigation stops even in the hospitals in providing a differential diagnosis.
So, Zabeth, how long have the children been in foster care? And I'd like to hear from Paul and Zabeth about this. How has it affected your relationship with your children?
Actually, our relationship with our children, obviously it could be better, but it's very good. The psychologist had come over and viewed it, and he was surprised at how bonded we still were.
So how long have they been in care, foster care?
Well, Bethany has been in foster care since 2007.
So
and the boys,
4 years.
2009.
They were with the grandparents
right.
previously, and then they went right. into foster care after that.
So what do they think of all this?
I don't know. I'm not sure. We're not allowed to tell them much. And we have been sparing their emotions
mm-hmm.
as well.
I think that there's going to be questions that come up, you know, in the future that we'll have to deal with. But right now, that has become normal life for them.
Right.
I'm sure it's challenging, and you see things now, and they're torn between two worlds.
Yeah.
You know, their friends are with mommy and daddy only, and they go and visit mommy and daddy. So
they know how to answer us, and they know how to answer the caregivers.
Right.
So give us the right answers, and give the caregivers the right answers, because they're living in two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
We have two different sets of morals a lot of the times. So.
Okay, now your lawyer, Doug Christie, is joining us. Doug, are you here with us now?
Yes, sorry about that. I'm here now, yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Doug. Now, you've watched this process, and my co-host for tonight is Mark Hashik. I don't think you've met Doug Christie before, have you?
Actually, we have met. I've talked to Doug on the phone. I don't know if he remembers, but we have talked.
In your other life as a journalist?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Now, Doug, we've been talking about the whole process involved in this, that you are guilty till you can prove yourself innocent, and you really can never prove yourself innocent. Families that are within this system and having to go to court under the Family and Child Services Act have less rights than criminals in this province because you don't have that right to presumption of innocence till proven guilty. You are guilty, guilty, guilty. There's just no way around it. What has been your experience in trying to bring justice to the Bain case?
Well, not only the Bain case, but certainly the Bain case left me with the feeling that it's really two opponents, really. The court is so favorable to the MCFD, so lacking in critical faculties towards the MCFD, that there's really no... I got no feeling of impartiality. I mean, and I've seen this in many other situations. It's not just the Bain case, but I just think that many of the lawyers who represent parents who've had their children taken away have been so beaten down that they never resist anymore. It's all, what can we do to placate MCFD so that they will let us have the children back, and anything they ask for will be done. This is not what I consider the role of an advocate or the role of a person who is opposed to the power of the state, which is what I've done for most of my life. So it's a big shock for me to watch the family court proceedings, or what they call family court, because there's only one side. There's what the government wants, what the MCFD wants, and if you're not prepared to satisfy them, well, it's a very much of an uphill battle. Even if you prove that the accusation is not established, if you can prove that, for instance, in a case like the Baines case, that this is not a shaken baby case, well, that's not sufficient.
Mm.
Now the children are in need of protection. Well, sure, the children are in need of protection at all times. It goes without saying. But where is there any evidence that that the parent who was not guilty of shaking the baby or non-accidental injury in the usual double speak of our time, they're not guilty of that, then why are the children in need of any more protection than they would with this parent or any other parent? Because children fall down. Children are hurt all the time. Children break their limbs playing. It's not an indication of abuse that children get hurt. They get hurt every day. My own children, when they were little, had broken wrists, and they fell down, and they cut themselves, and They had to go to the hospital. They got fish hooks in their feet. You know, I mean, this happened.
That happened to one of mine, too.
Yeah. Well, if every injury justified apprehension of a child, I don't know what children would be safe in this society.
Well, Doug, you know what the provision I love in the Family and Child Services Act is? The one that says if a child is emotionally harmed. Now, I know you'll agree with me this, but you know, when my four kids were teenagers, I thought it was my duty to emotionally harm them, you know, because typically what they wanted versus what they should be having.
I don't think you really mean those words literally, but what does emotional harm mean? It's so subjective.
Well, now it means 16-year-olds who don't want to be at home can go to the foster system and get independent living allowance so that they don't have to live at home and be emotionally harmed by
rules.
They can
go and have abortions, or they can take drugs. And I don't know.
Doug, you're going to be participating in this conference that's coming up as well. What would be some of the solutions? Like, I'm looking at this from, you know, for a long time, you know, there's got to be a constitutional question to this. The right to privacy, the right to separation of state, the right to raise your children, because
determination by the judiciary. And I think there are educational seminars put on by sensitivity trainers for the judiciary that are giving their point of view to the judiciary in matters of spousal abuse, in matters of MCFD concerns. There should be seminars that give the judiciary another point of view, namely that parental rights are important, that the first responsibility for children is with parents, not the state. And the state is not perfect. I mean, more children die in so-called care, which means government care, than in the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the judiciary has to take a good look at what the state has done. And they should be prepared to stand up to the state and say no to the state. But I have never seen that in any of the judicial proceedings that I've participated in.
Well, you know what's interesting, Doug, is I've been doing this obviously for too long now, because I'm seeing two new trends. Families that I helped 15, 20 years ago, their children are now old enough to tell me about their experiences during the time that they were apprehended from their families. And I think that's a lost voice that needs to have a forum. That these
young... the thing that will change, I suppose, over time is if children actually get to say things.
Well, you know what's interesting, Doug, is they can't sue the ministry, because the only way you succeed in the courts now, because we've been trying to do this with, well, the Mabbitt case, of which you're very familiar with, right?
Right.
Is if there's extreme harm imposed upon children. So that means your kids have to be so screwed up that you take them for an assessment and a psychologist says...
Put it this way, if the harm that was being measured in terms of state harm was the same degree of harm or the same measure of harm as is applied to parents, then it would be quite clear that the state would be liable for an awful lot of damages.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't happen. I mean, most of my life has been fighting the power of the state, and they have all the lawyers with that money can buy to defend the interests of the government. And it's a very long, hard road.
And the industry attached to that in this case, the billion-dollar industry.
Yeah. And the experts are basically retained and paid by that same source of power. I mean, they don't want to be acting for an individual client who hasn't got a great deal of money to pay them for their expertise. They want a regular job as an expert, like Dr. Charles Smith. Look, there's a perfect example.
Yes.
Of someone who became an expert because he served the state, and once he was serving the state, he became a bigger expert because he's been quoted in this case, in that case, in this case, in that case. Well, who could ever disagree with Dr. Charles Smith?
Mm.
And I'm afraid there are too many Dr. Charles Smiths running around working for the government day after day.
Doug, Mark Hashik here. In your experience, Do you see any pattern? Do parents who are wronged in this way fit a certain profile or share common traits, or are all parents equally susceptible to this type of injustice?
Well, I haven't really got enough experience to say that, you know, the few cases that I've been involved in fit any particular pattern. I've known one thing about them, and that the parents were very wounded. I don't think I've ever met a pair of parents with the dedication, the articulation, and the faith that the Baines have. I mean, that really stood out in my mind. And the fact that they never lost their temper at anybody, that they stayed together for one thing, when usually when the government seeks to accuse one or the other of abuse, then the usual result is the parents turn on each other.
Well,
or
actually, no, Doug. What happens is the social worker says, if you'll just leave your husband, we'll give you back the kids.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. That's what I've seen said and done in another case that I was involved in. Two or three cases that I've seen where that was said to the wife, usually. You can have the children if you separate and don't ever allow that man to come back into your home again. And usually the woman ends up torn, because quite often the father is a good father. Or, you know, nobody's perfect, but they're better than no father. And I don't know. There seems to be an agenda in the MCFD, and it's about power and control. And the arbitrary exercise of that power and absolute devastation for anyone who disagrees with one of our experts. And they have their stable of experts that verifies their position, and their position is what their expert says.
Quite
a rare case where the parents can acquire the support of any expert, as the Baines did.
Well, and I want to touch on that, Doug, because we've got several emails in here, and this first one I'm going to read is from Rob Unruh. And he has been what Doug Christie has just mentioned. You guys, you had a great rallying effort of people. And Ron says this: I have for the past 2 years blogged a daily GPS post to chronicle the plight of Paul and Zabeth Bain to recover their family of now four. And perhaps sometime soon, the ministry, in fact, will return these children after robbing this family of their formative years. I'm going to come back to that point. The Baines have had great support system. I've been writing for Derek recently. I am so pleased that Derek Hoare's daughter, Ayn, has acquired a monumental amount of helpers and supporters across Canada and around the world. Then he wants to thank us here at Roadkill Radio for our continuing support and strong record of advocacy for disenfranchised parents. And Ron, you can be assured, he says, please do not let up. I will never let this up. This is one of my commissions in life, and mostly because I don't like bullies, and I don't like idiots, and I don't like people who harm children. I am opposed to child abuse on any level. And this is one form of child abuse we can truly end, and this is what we should be doing. I want to read another email here. And this goes to Derek Hoare's case. We talked about the website. Mandy has written in with the address. The website has its own domain name. You could go to the website and it'll redirect you right to the Facebook group. The address, people, if you want to join up with what Derek's doing and keep advised of what's happening with Ayn, is Justice for Ayn, and Ayn is spelled A-Y-N. Justice for Ayn, AIN.com, and justiceforayn.ca. Both of those will take you right to the Facebook group that will be keeping everybody up on Derek. I know Ron Unruh, GPS, has also added his. Papa has also given a page, I believe, to Derek Hoare and helped you guys out. So there's a whole bunch of movement of efforts to do this. So what kind of support have you got for this conference? Let's talk about this conference. We've talked about who's going to be there. Is the minister going to be there? Is Mary McNeil going to attend this conference and understand what should be going on? Because this seems a perfect time for her to have some understanding to these issues.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I have sent her an invitation, and a link to the website registration form. And I would love to have her there. Actually, we've
invited... And probably a complimentary registration form,
definitely.
I would assume. Yeah.
You know, I would like to see... I've had out-of-town response from social workers that are attending.
Good.
And I was ecstatic to hear that we have people from Ontario and Manitoba coming that are in the social service work. I do. I have a couple of people from the BC Registered Social Workers in BC coming, as well as family law, legal aid in various parts of Canada coming. But I would love to see the minister come. I would love to see any social workers from this area come. I'd love to see the workers involved in our case come. I'd love to have that letter. The invitations have been sent out.
Okay.
But that's something they need. They need to be there and hear this, because this is going to help them be better. This is going to help them know the differential diagnosis and know what they're looking for in these cases.
Well, let's talk about that, because another email we got is, what is a differential diagnosis? What, you know, this is, it sounds good, sounds important, sounds like it should be a reasonable, you know, part of an investigation. Let us know, what is a differential diagnosis when you're talking about investigation into child abuse?
Yeah, the original diagnosis would be something like a child was hit and produced fractures, or a child was shaken and she has a subdural or hematoma, retinal bleeds. The differential diagnosis to that would involve, for instance, with shaken baby syndrome, would involve history taking, if there was an accident or circumstances where the child had fallen, etc. Also, blood work would be taken. Even vitamin K deficiency can produce some bleeding in the brain.
In other words, take in all the possible considerations.
You have disease, and you have lack in nutrition, you have accidents, you have vaccinations, you have prematurity. There are thousands of tests that can be done, but they are expensive and they take time. And the doctors do not seem willing to do this differential diagnosis, and the social workers' hands are tied when they rely on an original diagnosis. They do not go out and seek a second opinion, which is what Paul and I had to do.
You basically became your own private investigators or medical investigators. I mean, you guys did what you needed to do to find out what could possibly be an explanation for this.
Exactly. I feel that we did the job that the social workers should have done.
Hmm.
Doug, you mentioned that the lawyers representing a lot of parents are kind of beaten down and they kind of roll over. Why is that? What are they, just a bunch of lazy bums? I would think that it would be in their best interests to be successful and garner more clients.
Oh, I think we may have lost Doug.
Oh, did we lose Doug?
Maybe you can email
me a response to that question.
Oh, I'm sure we'll get him back. I see Len madly dialing the phone over there. You know, are we suffering from the same thing with our social workers as the judges? They want to believe the worst case scenario, then they can keep the kid in the system, and then they can't be publicly spanked for making a wrong decision or returning a child compromise situation. You know, is that part of it?
I can understand that you want to protect the child. But what they've done is they've gone to the extreme on the other side. There's a lack of balance in this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the jump is to overprotect. But what happens is the lack of that investigation process there has left, like, even the courts are failing, and they are convicting people that are innocent. And that is like you said, it's child abuse. They are harming these innocent children, the innocent families, through their faulty convictions of innocent people. But it does start with the hospitals and with the social workers conducting proper investigations based on proper evidence.
Well, you know, because in my advocacy, we have this huge amount of cases of unwarranted apprehensions. Then I have my basket load of, you know, families who really need help, but they need that support, and they don't get the support. They're just, again, destroyed. Then I have this other group that probably shouldn't be parents, you know. And you know what? They get their kids because they're willing to tell the social workers whatever they want to hear. They're willing to admit to being alcoholics and needing, support. They admit to, in one case, and Doug is familiar with this, and I understand Doug's back, that, you know, the woman who's given back her three small children, who's an admitted alcoholic, has put into place a safety plan that the social workers are okay with because she will hire a babysitter on those times she's going to get blitzo drunko, okay? And social workers are okay with that. And they go to extraordinary lengths to keep the children with her because not only do they have the children in care, of which is adding to their client list, they also are providing all these services, which actually increases their budget again. And, you know, they can look like they're actively doing something that's absolutely bizarre, right? But, you know, that's why, you know, there seems to be such a disconnect in the reasoning and rationalization of how we administer protection services in this province. Anyway, I think we've got Doug back, Mark.
Building empires.
Doug, are you back?
Yeah.
Hello, Doug. Yeah. Just
I
a quick.
Just say it's all about building an empire. The more work you have and the more you appear to be doing, the bigger your budget, the more employees, the more important you are as a supervisor of more people. It's like the tax department or any other bureaucratic empire, the more you can demonstrate the need for your particular niche of activity, the more money you get.
Yeah.
Doug, speaking of money, why are these lawyers who are representing parents rolling over like you say they are? Wouldn't it be in their best interest to be more successful? I don't quite understand that.
Well, you see, the problem is they can't be more successful because the system will not allow them to win. And a guy like me, who's maybe a little stupid and a little bit naive, I just act as if it's the same principle that applies in any other case, that the Crown has to prove its case. Well, that's why I don't like doing those things, because that's apparently not how the system works, and I don't know how the system can work unless there's the right of the accused to basically be defended. And I guess what's happened with a lot of lawyers, and this is something I've learned from listening to them, is that they say, well, it's easier to get along by going along.
Hmm.
And
well, and it also, I mean, let's face it, there's a whole another industry for the legal profession in this. By the more times you appear in court, the more requirements for courts and judges and all the rest of it, Doug. I mean, everybody
and
has,
usually on legal aid.
Well, and now
billed by the court appearance.
Well, wait a minute,
not
though.
By the results.
Wait, can I ask you a question? Do you have to charge HST now?
Oh, sure.
Ah. So the government is making money, tax money, off of these cases on top of everything else?
Oh, yeah. Well, lawyers have always had to pay PST and GST ever since Glenn Clark made that the law. Doctors don't, but lawyers do, as if lawyers' services aren't as necessary as medical services. Well,
you know, I mean, we're fastly running out of time here, and I want to get to give you time to promote the conference. But, you know, shouldn't families who get involved in this be funded totally with their legal representation? I mean, this is a financial hardship that the state has a conflict of interest in, because now we know, I knew before, that they're getting tax monies from this. They're profiting from your anguish. All these professionals and every service that's provided for assessments and such is also being taxed, I'm assuming. You know, these assessments don't cost $500 or $600. We're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, right, for assessments.
Yeah.
We have one more email, and then we're going to turn this over, and you guys could promo the conference. Doug, I'm going to say goodbye to you.
Yep,
thank you so much. Always so good to have you on Roadkill Radio.
Thank you very much. Have a great night, and thanks for having the Baines on there.
We'll talk to you again.
Yep.
Email on Ayn from a Taylor Nunez. It literally makes me sick how the government can just walk in and take your children with no explanation and no reason, just because. The Ministry of Children and Family does not keep families together. They tear them apart. I hope that when Ayn is returned to her father, that he sues the government of British Columbia. That's us again. We get on both ends, right?
Yeah.
For kidnapping and wrongdoing. And I agree. I feel so bad for Derek and his family, especially Ayn. The ministry needs to focus on the children that need protection, not the ones that don't. And that's a very good point, because when all these resources are going to attack your family, there are probably children and family who really need some help.
Yeah.
What website can people register for this conference, Zabeth? Is anybody allowed to come if you're interested in what's going on? If you want to become an advocate for family involved in this, is the doors open?
Oh, yeah, I strongly encourage anybody involved in legal or medical professions as well as social work to come. What we're doing, though, that
teachers.
You know, if you're a parent, you can come. But what we'd like to do, especially with the conference, is that there is a number of people that are parents wrongfully accused, as we were, and we're offering this conference to them. We're asking for sponsors for those people so that they can attend. But what they're going to get is they're going to get all the information they need for their defense, and they're going to get a chance to counsel with the doctors and with the lawyers that are there for their case. And we'd like to provide that for
it's
them.
It's a win all the way around.
That's what we're hoping for.
All right. Well, good for you guys. I am so blessed to see you putting all this experience that you now have into working toward the good, and good that's going to benefit a lot of people and mostly important their kids. So bravo to you guys.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Okay. Good show tonight, Mark Hasek.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting first date. Ben, you'd never had one like this before, huh?
I can't wait for number two. It's going to be great.
All right, everybody. Next week, we've got Nurses for Life on and a whole nother good show, as always, on Roadkill Radio. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Roadkill Radio. Join us again next week for another trip down the superhighway of information, fact, and truth.